You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We've all heard the stories. Whether it's Buck O'Neill telling the tales of Oscar Charleston.
Oscar Charleston could do it all. The closest thing to Oscar Charleston, this is what we old-timers say who saw them all, the closest thing to Oscar Charleston was Willie Mays. The closest thing to Oscar was Willie Mays. Oscar had a little more power than Willie. Oscar was a little quicker than Willie. Oscar's arm was a little stronger than Willie's. And Oscar's range was as good as Willie's.
Or Joe Black telling the stories of Josh Gibson and Satchel Paige.
It had to be Satchel Paige, Josh Gibson, Buck Leonard. Satchel Paige could pitch. When he got in the big leagues in 40, and in age 40, he had control. And then Josh, the stories you hear about Satch and Josh, 90% are true. Most of the other guys, 90% are lies. Josh could hit. I mean, when he was in the Negro Leagues, Campanella was never starting catching an all-star game. It was Josh Gibson, big 6'3", 225-pound, hit and run. But he came in our dugout one day and told the manager, he said, Andy Porter, old Josh's going to hit you over that fence and that fence. And you know I feel good tonight. I think I'm going to take you over that center field fence, too. He got 2 out of 3, hit the left field fence. Ball hit off the right field wall, next time straightway center field.
But it wasn't until December of 2020, Major League Baseball did something we all already knew, finally elevated the Negro Leagues to Major League status. Bob Kendrick, president of the Negro Leagues Museum in Kansas City.
Tremendous pride. I reflect obviously and naturally to my dear friend, the late great Buck O'Neill, who was the architect of building a Negro Leagues baseball museum and a legendary Negro leaguer in his own right. And every time we hit one of these milestone moments like that, I reflect to him because I know how proud he would be. But I think we carry that same level of pride at the Negro Leagues baseball museum and the Negro Leagues family by and large, very proud of what we're seeing, this level of recognition, the level of engagement around the Negro Leagues and the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum is at an all-time high. And so we are so honored to be part of what led us to that epic decision in December when Major League Baseball announced what we've known all along is that the Negro Leagues were a major league.
Larry Lester was a co-founder of the Negro Leagues Museum and one of the foremost historians on Negro Leagues baseball.
Well, it was a bittersweet moment in that it was bitter that it took so long for them to recognize what I already knew about the greatness of these ball players. The sweetness is that it finally happened. I didn't expect for it to happen. It was a surprise to me and others. I never campaigned for the inclusion of Negro League stat or the elevation, as they call it, to the major league level, but I accepted and I welcome the opportunity to share new information with baseball fans.
So one of the most important aspects of the new designation of the Negro Leagues, stats and records of all players will be part of Major League Baseball's history.
The stats came from the Seamheads Negro League database. Now, this is a database that has been under construction for many, many years, decades even. And Baseball Reference recently acquired the database so we could show it on Baseball Reference. And that was the work of a lot of researchers. It was Gary Ashwill, Scott Simkus, Mike Lynch, Kevin Johnson, Larry Lester. They all did a ton of work to put this database together. And we acquired it, and now we were able to present it on our site.
That's Adam Dorowski from BaseballReference.com, a site you can go to right now to look up Josh Gibson or Satchel Paige or Monty Irvin or any player from the Negro Leagues era.
This project means so much to all of us that are working on it. And just to make sure that we did it right too, we had so many experts working with us. We had Bob Kendrick, we had Larry Lester, we had Sean Gibson, the great grandson of Josh Gibson, working on this with us. We had players like Adam Jones and Andrew McCutcheon reviewing it to make sure that we were presenting this data in the most respectful way possible to tell the story of the Negro Leagues, because we want to tell the stories of the context in which these games were played while also showing the stats of these all-time greats.
But how did the stats get there? It's a story that spans decades.
I was curious. After I got out of college in the early 70s, I knew about Satchel Paige because I went to school with his kids, and Buck O'Neill was my grade school teacher, and I grew up in the neighborhood with a bunch of Negro League veterans. So I was curious to see if the stories matched the stats. And so I spent a lot of time in the library looking at microfilm and making notes, pencil, pad, and calculator, because we didn't have the computers or internet back then. And I would just hand calculate statistics, game by game, player by player, season by season. And I enjoyed doing it. I like working with numbers. And it was a labor of love.
Gary Ashwell from Seamheads.com, who've provided these stats to BaseballReference.com. And his journey goes back a long ways.
I mean, it goes way back to the 1980s. You know, I was a baseball fan. I was growing up in Kansas City as a fan of the Royals, and I was a little bit of a stats nerd, and I used to read Bill James's baseball abstracts and so on. And at some point, my mom gave me a copy of Only the Ball Was White by Bob Peterson, which is sort of the classic first history of black baseball in modern times. It was published in 1969, but she gave this to me when I was a teenager, and I just thought it was the most fascinating thing I'd ever read, and I couldn't help but notice, you know, I had all these baseball encyclopedias, and you've got all these numbers for the white major leaguers, and you can pore over their careers and their numbers and so on, but you couldn't do that with the black ball players, and there wasn't at that time. This is the early 80s. There was nothing. No statistical record anybody had published, you know, at all. So I'd always had that in the back of my mind. Like, I was just really curious about it. And over the years, some of the great historians of black baseball, like Larry Lester and Dick Clark and John Holloway, started coming out with some numbers that were published in various places, but there was still not a comprehensive encyclopedia anywhere, and you couldn't really analyze the numbers the way you could with the white majors. So, you know, it's just something I'd always been interested in. I collected everything I could. It was kind of a hobby of mine. But it wasn't until around the year 2000, I was in graduate school, and I noticed that the library where I was doing some research, not related to baseball, had microfilm copies of some of the great black newspapers like the Chicago Defender, Pittsburgh Courier, and so on. And kind of on a whim, I got some microfilm reels down, started checking through them, and realized that there was just tons of material there. There's box scores all over the place. And I just kind of started photocopying the stuff. And eventually I just started compiling stuff. And eventually I was asked to join a statistical project that the Hall of Fame was doing about, this was about, 17, 18 years ago now. And this was the one that they did prior to the special Hall of Fame election they had in 2006. This was sort of the first modern attempt at a comprehensive, you know, Negro League encyclopedia. So I did some contributions to that. And then eventually a friend of mine, Kevin Johnson, approached me. He was working for a website called Seamheads.com. And he said, why don't we just bundle up all your stuff and, you know, present it on our website as a, you know, as a actual database. I also approached Larry Lester and Dick Clark because they had continued to work on their material over the years and to enhance it and add to it. And so we wound up folding their material into our database. And so there you go.
The amount of stats and box scores that have been unearthed through the years is staggering.
Eventually got into the IT field, and I designed a database to input all my data. And I can run a report that shows me how many box scores are in my database, and I came up with about 14,000. And that goes all the way back to post-Civil War, African Americans have been playing baseball since the Civil War. So it's all documented. I didn't do it overnight. I spent a lot of time in the library and a lot of time in front of my computer. And sometimes I would stay at the library until 9 o'clock every night when they kicked me out, and making microfilm copies because I didn't have the internet back then. A lot of dimes went into those microfilm machines, print copies.
And the hunt continues today.
Because the Negro Leagues themselves only published statistics occasionally, you know, the Black publications, Black newspapers in particular, tried to cover Negro League baseball as much as they could, but they tended to lack space. They were mostly weekly newspapers, and so at best they could devote 2 or 3 pages a week to all sports, right? So you didn't really have something like, say, the Sporting News for white baseball, or the annual baseball guides that you would have that would publish all the statistics, you know, comprehensively for, you know, for the white majors. So basically, just even though the leagues did keep track of statistics, it often was simply not published. So because there's no central source, we've got to go and track down box scores for individual games. And that is, you know, quite a task, because there is no place, not even the Library of Congress, that has all the newspapers that you need for this. So it does involve, in some instances, traveling all over the country. If it's something that you can't, you know, have shipped to you, you can use interlibrary loan. You're looking at reels of microfilm and scrolling through it and trying to dig up, you know, these games one by one. So it's quite a labor-intensive process. It really takes, you know, takes a lot of work, even just to get the box scores in the first place. You know, that's not even considering the amount of work you have to do after that to, you know, produce a good record out of these box scores, you know, because you have, don't have an official box score necessarily. You might have different box scores in different newspapers, different publications. You have to sort of collate them and put them together and try to figure out when there are, you know, discrepancies, when they disagree with each other, when they're missing information, you know, how do you deal with that? So it's quite a process, finding stuff, you know, interpreting it, getting it all into a, you know, a comprehensive record. You know, it's just, it's a lot of work.
As this small band of historians bring these legends to life, each of them latch on to a special story they will always hold dear. Whether it's Larry Lester with Bullet Rogan.
One particular player was Wilbur Bullet Rogan. In researching the 1924 season, because that was the first year of the Colored World Series, I came across the name Rogan, and it was quite interesting. As I went from game to game, he would have 2, 3, 4 hits every game, and he was pitching at the top of the rotation and batting cleanup. So I'm like, who is this guy? Just, and I calculated his batting average and his pitching, and at the end of the season, he's batting over 400, and he won, I think, 15 or 16 games that season, which is quite a bit when they only play a 60, 70, or 80 game schedule. So I was just blown away by this two-way ball player who batted cleanup, and it was the ace of the pitching staff. He was the original Ohtani. I mean, he was playing every day two-way, just like Ohtani is doing today. So Ohtani is not original, and a lot of originality comes out of the Negro League.
Or Gary Ashwell on his favorite story hunt.
Most old newspapers, I mean, the way we access them now are through microfilmed versions of them. The problem is that means the newspaper was microfilmed at some point. It was photographed. And if something went wrong in the course of photographing the paper, that screws up the record for everybody, right? So, for example, I was looking for box scores in the Cincinnati Inquirer for the 1921 season, which is a season when the Cuban Stars, which is a team of Cuban players, they were members of the Negro National League, and they actually used Cincinnati's Redland Field as their home field. So they were based in Cincinnati for that year. Found 25 or 30 box scores for the Cuban Stars and Cincinnati newspapers for that year. One was microfilmed, I believe, out of focus, so you could barely read it, right? So it's just like impossible. You just look at it, it's a blurry thing. The other one was microfilmed, and they cut off like half of it. So you just had half the box score, right? So I was like, oh, what do you do about this? So what I actually wound up doing is I contacted the Cincinnati Public Library, And I asked them, I was like, well, do you still have, you know, physical copies of the newspaper? Like, or do you just have the microfilm? Because in a lot of instances, libraries would microfilm their newspapers and they would like throw away the original papers. And they just have the microfilm left. That's all they have, right? In this case, I was lucky enough to find out that in fact they had, you know, the original newspapers. They were bound into volumes down in the basement. And a librarian there actually went down, looked up these games, and was able to, you know, photocopy the pristine original box scores that were not out of focus and not half cut off, you know. So I was able to dig that up, you know.
Or Adam, and the first page he looked at on Baseball Reference.
I think that Josh Gibson and Oscar Charleston were the ones that I really wanted to see, because we hear, you know, that from Buck O'Neill called Oscar Charleston the best baseball player, period, of all time. Josh Gibson, you know, just a five-tool catcher. You don't have those in the game. They're just amazing. But we knew about them. I think what I've really loved seeing is the players that I maybe didn't know as much about. Some of them Hall of Famers, some of them not. But now we have these stats, and it's just unbelievable.
So next time you look up the stats of cool Papa Bell or Rube Foster or Buck Leonard or Smokey Joe Williams or Leon Day, just know the time, the effort, and the labor of love it took for you to enjoy those numbers.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazons of the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team.